Jews are kicked out of every single country eventually they're in. I'm afraid it could happen here in America. When America or anybody else says, you know, the Jewish people should calm down. Israel's starting to get a little out of hand. First of all, what they're doing to you, if Canada was doing that to us, we would make them into a parking lot of glass within a week, and all of us would feel justified. That don't lecture Israel for what they're doing. Who are you to say that? You have every right to defend yourself. You have a right to live.
I never predicted this, that you would start to see figures on the conservative right who are starting to articulate hostility to Israel. The Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson's and others. Are you concerned that 10 years from now it kind of overtakes the Republican Party?
I don't think it's going to take 10 years. We are now getting threats from our own side. Me, we're in danger. Stand with the biggest protector that you have, and it ain't the United States. It's God. The only one that will save Israel is God.
Right.
You're fighting absolute evil.
Today's interview is such an honor and a privilege for me. And that's because, and you might be surprised to hear this, because I don't think I've actually told you, dear viewers, this yet, but our guest today, Glenn Beck, was the chief inspiration to me that led to the birth of this channel, JTV. Now, that may come as a bit of a surprise to you, and I want to tell you briefly why that is the case. So wind back about, 12, 13 years, when I was 16 years old. And I remember this was kind of the time where, after I'd come back from school and switch on the TV, I was kind of slowly moving away from Disney Channel, moving over to the news as I started to find that a bit more, I don't know, relevant, interesting. And one thing that is you have in the UK is the news is supposedly, emphasis on the word supposedly, meant to be impartial. And so they'll just be reporting the news day to day. And then one day, I must have been, I think I was 16, I switched over to some of the American channels. And it was quite late at night. And it was 10 o'clock at night in the UK. And I turn on, oh, that's the wrong picture. I turn on Fox News. And there I see Glenn Beck. And he has this show where he's talking about the news, but he's also giving his opinions and sharing values and pushing ideas that hopefully can try to influence hearts and minds rather than just telling news, but also like shaping or giving arguments on how we should understand this. And he was educating, and not just educating, but doing it in a super entertaining way. And that was so intriguing to me that people could use media to try to actually educate and influence in really powerful and meaningful ways. And then, I was completely hooked and basically had ended up having lots of late nights and being very tired at school the next day because I was so addicted to his program and his style of engaging viewers. And then I saw that he was a pioneer. We now see loads of people creating new media, but Glenn set up, and this must have been in 2011 or 2012, he left Fox to set up his own channel. Originally, it was called GBTV. It was own streaming platform, and now it's known, as many of you will know, the Blaze Media. And so he was a complete pioneer in that front too. And he basically, I basically kind of felt, I want to do what he's doing, but maybe I've also got to reflect on what are some of the key values I want to push. And so I spent a year studying in Israel, now I'm going to speed things up very quickly, and came back to London and felt there's not media like this that can help to share Jewish values and ideas for Jews and non-Jews alike. That's what led to the establishment of JTV. And so I kind of tried to copy his high production value and styles. This is one of our first clips that we did. Please forgive the shocking logo, which looks like it was done by a five-year-old. But we slowly learned. And now I was following him and seeing that he kind of moved also to a more podcast kind of style. So we kind of moved in that direction. But essentially, Glenn, I have to thank you for being a chief inspiration to me behind the channel. So thank you so much making the time to be here.
That is amazing. Thank you. I knew that story, but I hadn't heard the whole story. So thank you very much. That's meaningful. It's meaningful.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I know we have limited time and there's so much I'd love to chat with you about. And I know Our viewers will be familiar with you. So the first thing I'd like to talk about before talking about all the big political topics of the day, let's just talk about media for a second, because you've been such a pioneer in this field. You've obviously been on a big journey in terms of media, type of media, but also how best to communicate political ideas. And I know you've reflected on that a lot. And, you know, it's something that you think about regularly because you're a really deep person and deep thinker. I wondered, you know, you think about how best to communicate in media, how to best express political views in ways that can capture people and draw more people in. You've been on such a journey. So what are some of the big lessons that you've learned about this and how to do this most effectively?
Jeez, how much time do you have?
As much as you have.
It's amazing to me how when I was on CNN, I was saying exactly the same things I was saying on Fox. And my first lesson was how desperate America was for any kind of anybody they could trust. Every year, the Associated Press puts out a poll of Americans as the most who are the most admired men in the world. And I was on vacation for the holiday. I was in Hawaii, and I was with my wife and family, and somebody came up to the table and said, "Glenn, you have to see this." And it was the results of that poll that year. And I was number three most admired man in the world, tied with Nelson Mandela and the Pope. And I looked at my family and I said, "This country's in much more trouble than I thought it was. You know, I'm even on this list, but to be tied, that's ridiculous." I went to Fox that year after Christmas. I went in January and I went to Fox. Within a year, 50% of the country hated my guts. And what I realized is it's the vehicle. It's the vehicle that you're driving. Because I could say these same things on CNN and everybody was like, "Oh, yeah, yeah." But soon as I crossed over to Fox, now I was a dangerous, dangerous man that was trying to destroy America. And it that came as a complete surprise to me. The next lesson I learned from this was, you know, I used to do, I mean, a lot of comedy. I mean, I used to tour the country. Nobody will believe this now, but I would go for 30 nights on the road, you know, doing comedy. And filling theaters with just doing comedy. I don't do that anymore. And I don't really do a lot of comedy on the show because when you have a very unfair media, everything you say will be taken and used against you. And so they took everything I said comedically and took it out of context. But also there was another part of the comedic view. This is a really hard job to do, as you know. You have to believe in the things you believe, and you have to believe that you're right, but you also have to be humble enough to realize you might be wrong. You're just somewhere down the road of getting to right. You know what I mean? And so when you speak, especially comedically and loudly, that hubris comes off and you just pit everybody who already doesn't like you hard against you. And when I left Fox, my audience really hated this, but I felt it was necessary. When I went on Fox, when I left Fox and started The Blaze, I thought, how can you go from one of the most respected, admired men in the country to half the country hating you in a 2-year period? And calling me Nazis, calling me every name under the sun. How does that happen? And I realized some of it was my fault. Some of it wasn't. But I came to the conclusion that I made some mistakes, but I was doing my best to get the information out to a large audience. And one of my mistakes was depending on a press that actually still was curious, that actually was honest. I really thought if I could present the facts and show you the documents and say, this is what's happening, here's the document, somebody in a press room would go, that guy's a clown, but what he's saying, is that true? And they would follow it and pursue it. And they never did because they didn't want to know the truth. And that was hard for me to understand at the time. But I went out and I really tried my best, and I'm still trying my best, to be more of a uniter because we are now in a dangerous place where we are so divided and we're about to be devoured. I mean, look at the streets in London. You're about to be devoured. And all of our politicians are laughing. All the people in power, all the media, they're just like, oh, you're a crazy kook. Look at the signs of what is happening. You're setting the streets on fire in two ways. You're bringing in people who do not want to be a part of Great Britain. They do not want to be a part of your laws. The same with us in America, same in Germany, same in Sweden. Okay, it's the same story all over the, strangely, all over the Western world. And then on top of it, you are discrediting yourselves and our government by covering, by lying, by ignoring. And so you're now inflicting additional pain onto the people that do want to be British. They do want to be there. They respect the heritage. They'll admit we've made mistakes. But you are now, you're on the wrong side. And so we have this horrible brew that if we're not careful, we can break into civil war. And if we turn on ourselves, there are wolves at the gates that are ready to devour us.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly how to get out of that, but it's not by, it's certainly not by being the loudest voice in the room.
Right, right. And this phenomenon you talk about, where this just denial of reality that you can that you see often from the far left and progressive in particular, where they just bury their heads in the sand to what's going on. I've noticed this particularly with regard to Israel and the Middle East and after October 7th, seeing so many people still pushing the same old tired tunes of two-state solution, all these things, when the facts are so clear that are... How does that happen? I actually remember listening to you talking about this years ago, where you spoke about normalcy bias, where people... It must be that the Palestinians, they just want something legitimate. It's not about ideological hatred, the same way they did with Hitler. No, he's just a bit upset about... He doesn't want global domination. Is there a way that you think we can get people out of these cognitive dissonance?
I don't know. I talked to a very wise historian yesterday and asked him that very question. And he said he felt the answer was... the wolves had to start feasting first. He said that will wake up, because they will feast on their side first. They'll feast on the weak ones first. And the weak ones are the politicians who are, you know, may I read something? Recording a series. I'm recording a series of audio stories to explain the world. I'm changing what I do and everything else in January. So this story is not going to come out until January, but let me just give you this scene. Let's see. When the Swedish prime minister asked why the government wasn't responding, she said, "We're rethinking what sovereignty means in the modern context." Within a week, Sweden no longer was flying any Swedish flags, no Swedish currency, no Swedish law, something else entirely. The footage was undeniable. Masked men enforcing curfews, beatings in alleys for alcohol possession, stonings for adultery, militias patrolling neighborhoods armed with Soviet rifles and French hand grenades. And that black flag flying over the courthouse. Europe had been flirting with fire for decades, but this was the match. France lit up next, Marseille, Toulouse, parts of Paris, not riots, occupations, synagogues destroyed, priests dragged from their altars, church bells replaced with loudspeakers calling for prayer, not to unite, but to warn. Then Belgium fell quiet, then the Netherlands. By the time Berlin responded, it was too late. And America? We were still here pretending it just couldn't happen here. Mm. That I think is what we are facing.
Yeah.
We are facing, we have to face at least the possibility. Well, you brought up the normalcy bias. What the normalcy bias is when things get really bad, you're automatically, and it's a self-defense mechanism so you don't go mad. You automatically just go, oh, I've seen this before. It's not going to be that bad. The people who stayed in the World Trade Center, when those planes hit the World Trade Center. You've never seen anything like that. And you're right there, two floors below it. And the alarm goes off and it says evacuate. And people went through this normalcy bias. People died because they said, it's not that bad. I'm just going to stay here and work. Or they went down the stairs and then they said, oh, I forgot to turn my lights off in the office. I'll be right back. Just keep going without me. That person never made it out because they just thought, oh, I got to turn off my office lights. I'll be back, but I don't want to leave and burn it. I mean, crazy things. I forgot my purse. I forgot my wallet. I got to go get that. No, you don't. Get out of the building. Mm. And so part of us works against seeing these things to keep us sane. But it is your job as a human being. You know, you're not an animal. You're a human being. You have to look beyond. And usually I have found this is a pretty good safety tip. If people say they're going to kill you, believe them.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah.
Believe
yeah.
them.
And that's primarily what one of Netanyahu's big messages was in his really powerful speech that he gave just after they began the strikes in Iran. He quoted Churchill and basically said, we are learning the lesson of Churchill, which is when they try and come to people come and destroy you, believe them. And Glenn, one of the things that, you know, you were talked to, you know, shared truthful perspectives on all kinds of topics. But one of the things that you were talking about, as I said, since I was 16 years old, was about the truth about what's happening in Israel. Remember, you did a really powerful event in Israel. You'd speak about it a lot and put your head above the parapet in the mainstream media and explain what's really going on. And I found that so inspiring as well. And I wondered, what at its root shapes your support for Israel? At its core, what does this come down to for you?
I was doing talk radio. I started talk radio in 2000, which you don't have anything like it, I don't think, in Europe or in Great Britain. And, you know, I started it. I've been in radio now. This is my 47th or 48th year in radio. Talk radio was just kind of blowhards, I thought. And, you know, they took themselves so seriously. So when I got into talk radio, I was doing something different. I was making fun of talk radio, just pretty much what I was doing when I was at Fox, making fun of cable news. I was doing it, but in a completely different way. And then September 11th happened. And I had just signed a contract to go national on the biggest radio network in America. And I remember that happened, and the company called me up. I was supposed to start in January, and they called me up September 12th and said, we need you on the air by Friday. And I looked at my wife and I said, I don't know. I don't have anything to say to America. I don't know what's causing all. I have no idea. And so I made a pact with the audience. I said, I don't know what this is. I don't know what's causing it, but I will find out. And if you'll take the journey with me, we'll figure it out together. And I remember something came up about the Middle East and the Palestinians. And a Palestinian, it was my first death threat, Palestinian guy called, and he said, you have to stop saying the Palestinians are bad and they're violent. They're not violent. And if you don't stop saying that, I will chop your head off myself. And it was like, oh, okay. I think point made. Thank you. Next caller. Another caller said to me, you know, we wouldn't have a problem with all these Jews if there weren't all these Jews. Okay. So I started noticing a pattern. And then I went over to Israel for the first time. And I walked the streets and I went from the Arab quarter to the Jewish quarter. And you've been there and you walk and it's just an archway. And on one side, it was dirty and oppressive. And on the other side, it was clean and bright and successful, you know, safe. And I walked through that archway and I said to the guy who was, you know, giving us a tour as a family, I said, what just happened? And he said, oh, you just crossed over to the Jewish quarter. And I said, where did we just leave? And he said, that was the Arab quarter. And it was at that moment that it crystallized for me, I've seen this movie before. In America, you see it by driving from the suburbs to the inner city. You see it from driving from the suburbs into the city of Detroit. And what's the difference? The difference is the people generally in the suburbs have not been told their whole life, you can't make it without me. You've got everybody in the way. These people are holding you down. The people who are successful are in the suburbs and they're like, nobody's holding me down. I'm just doing it. But when you are taught your whole life, it's them, those people, they're doing it. You become reliant on the state, you less reliant on yourself. And on the flip side, even better than any entrepreneurs that I've ever seen, because Jewish people have a different, they have a much starker reality in history. Of nobody's going to do it for you. You got to do it yourself. They become very successful. They become very independent. They become very close-knit because they know we're the only ones that have each other's back. But they become successful because they are not relying on anyone else because they know no one else has their back. That's the secret of the Middle East and Israel, you know, just economically speaking. Then you add Islamists. You add that on top of it, and you have Sharia law, and it is all about, I honestly think it is absolute evil. Sharia law is evil, and anybody who doesn't see it as evil is, I don't know, either so misguided or, you know, you've been captured by evil, because it's quite obvious. The other thing is on Israel, I don't like bullies. I always have stood up for the underdog. It's one of the things my father taught me. My first time I went to Israel, I told my family we were going on vacation, and I said, we're going to Poland first, because to understand Israel, I think we have to understand Auschwitz.
Wow.
And my wife said, honey, I just want to remind you, anything that starts and Auschwitz, I don't classify it as a vacation. And,
when I went to Poland, the check-in lady said to me, are you guys going for a fun, you know, a clubbing vacation? I was like, yeah, no, I'm going to see where my ancestors perished.
Yeah, right. It's not really a vacation. Anyway, so I went there and we saw it. And then you understand Israel. Then you understand why Israel must exist. And then when you get to the Temple Mount, if you are religious at all, it's the most bizarre experience I've ever felt. It's almost, my wife and I describe it to each other as almost a pulsar. It you can feel the power from the Temple Mount. It almost, we were up on the border of Lebanon, and I turned to her at one point and I said, can you still feel the Temple Mount? And it's why this little teeny postage stamp of an area feels like the axis of the world runs through it, because it is the throne of God. It is. And I know where I stand. I know who I serve. Absolutely. And I know the only reason why Jews are being persecuted is because of that.
Yeah.
And I will stand with you.
I'm so excited to share with you something that I've been working on for a while. We've just taken JTV content to the next level. Introducing JTV Plus, a new platform streaming exclusive content created and handpicked by me. Get ready for jaw-dropping documentaries, exclusive interviews, insider access, and so much more. JTV Plus brings you captivating stories that will shock and inspire you, stories that honestly, I'm discovering for the first time too. From Israel to Jewish history to Judaism, it's all there. In exclusive interviews, you'll hear guests open up about things they've never shared publicly before. Plus, I'll take you behind the scenes where I get a lot more personal with you. By joining JTV Plus, you're not just joining an exclusive community, you're partnering with me to help JTV reach new heights. Just search j-tv.plus and join our exclusive community today. There's a link in the video description. I'll see you there. And one of the things I was so taken by when watching you as a teenager was your combination of both political messages, but also bringing your godly religious values into that, making it real. You know, so many people, they're like, well, that's just my private thing. You actually made it real and brought it to life. And that was so inspiring for me as someone that's trying to bring religious literacy to the world.
How can that be part of your religious life and not your life? There's no such thing. Right. You know, you can't tell me that I have to keep my religion to myself. I'm not going to tell you, you've got to become a Christian and not, you're wrong for being Jewish or Muslim or anything. I'm not doing that. I'm going to live my values, which makes me a very peculiar person, makes you a very peculiar person, makes Islamists very peculiar people. Mm-hmm. But that is, to their core, that's who we are. And I can't change who I am. And if you change who you are on Saturday, Friday, or Sunday, and all of a sudden you're that person, you're a fraud.
Right, absolutely.
You're a fraud.
And a friend of mine, when I talked to them about, you know, what are the key arguments we need to make about Israel's right? Because the chief argument that they lodge at Israel's door is, you Jews are thieves. You stole this land. And people say, no, we have to make the legal arguments, you know, legally that we have the right to be there through international law. The UN approved it, the Balfour. Then they say, no, let's make the indigenous case. Then you can say, no, just the law of war, that, you know, someone that wins a war, you have the right to land. And you say, no, well, what about the biblical history? And I say, actually, I think the only argument that's actually going to cut through, because we tried all of these and they're not cutting through, is actually a very simple statement that this land belongs to the Jews because the God of Israel assigned it as such. And by the way, you're worried about, oh, the secular audience will laugh at that. Israel's fighting among a religious region. So why are you talking a secular Western language? Talk the language of God. And I think Muslims will respect that a lot more.
The only one that will save Israel is God.
Right.
You're fighting absolute evil. And I believe in a force of evil, and I believe in a force of God. You can't deny the reality in which you are in. It'd be like fighting the Nazis and going, yeah, well, they're a little misguided. No, they're Nazis. You know what I mean? You must name the enemy and then stand with the biggest protector that you have. And it ain't the United States. It's God. Right. I mean, what's happening right now is miraculous, you know. And I got to tell you, every argument that you just made is a winning argument for anybody else. It's a winning argument, probably not for us, definitely not for you, but it's a winning argument for everybody else. Well, we won this in a war. We took that land in a war. Okay. Right. You have all of the reasons to have it. But here's another one. Jews are kicked out of every single country eventually they're in. I'm afraid it could happen here in America. If we replace this president with a leftist, look out to the Jewish population in America. So you're kicked out of every place. And then you're told how to defend yourself. You know what? You got a scrap of land. It's the only place where you are in charge of the land. You are in charge of your own destiny. You have the right to carry a gun because you're running the country. And when America or anybody else says, you know, the Jewish people should calm down, Israel's starting to get a little out of hand. First of all, do you think the United States of America would put up with this if Canada was doing this, what they're doing to you, if Canada was doing that to us? We would make them into a parking lot of glass within a week, and all of us would feel justified. That don't lecture Israel for what they're doing. Who are you to say that? You have every right to defend yourself. You have a right to live, period. End of discussion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just, it's amazing. And then the saddest part is, maybe because of thousands of years of exiles affected the Jewish psyche, many people in the Jewish community, less so, I'd say, since October 7th, but many people feel the need to be so apologetic, and they feel this sense of guilt. And so it's so important to get this message and that you've just said, to get that across to people.
Look, they're doing the same thing to America. We all feel guilty. We're white. We have to apologize for our past. I wasn't there. wasn't there during slavery. My people were not there. We're not here in America at the time. Get off that. So you have nothing to apologize. And, you know, you've seen how it works out when you're very, very nice and compliant.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't work out at all.
Yeah, it's all an attempt to demoralize. And that's what we're seeing happening in America. And there's so many parallels between what's happening with America and Israel. And just in the interest of time, just because I know we don't have so long, I want to talk about what you just touched on before, which is what's the way things are going for the relationship between Americans and Israel and the Jewish community? Because I never predicted this, that you would start to see figures on the conservative right, and I would still say it seems to be like a minority, but you know where I'm going with this, who are starting to articulate a hostility. You know, I really never saw this coming, but a hostility to Israel. You know, conspiracy theorists, the Candace Owens, and sometimes the Tucker Carlsons and others. What do you think is going on here? And are you concerned that this is going to become, you know, like 10 years from now, you'll have a congressman, senators that start to have these views and it kind of overtakes the Republican Party?
I don't think it's going to take 10 years.
Really?
I said in 2008 or 9, I'd have to look it up, clearly, you are going to see the hatreds of the 1930s, not just on the streets of Germany. You're going to see them all over Europe, and they will come here as well. And you will see exactly what we saw in the 1930s here on our streets. And nobody believed me, and here we are. Here we are. This is an ancient evil. I will tell you that it doesn't just concern me. I take it very seriously because we're now getting threats from our own side. Me are getting threats, and we're in danger. And I have to tell you, it's ancient and it's easy to blame somebody else, and who always gets it? The Jews do. But it's going to get harder and harder for people to stand up. You know, I brought my kids to Auschwitz in 2011 because I knew this was coming, and I wanted my kids. I told them. While we were standing there, I told them, it's coming again. And if we're going to survive and be on the right side, we have to make our choices right now. Because if you don't choose now, as it becomes more and more fuzzy, because all these people that you know, all the people on TV, everybody's just going to start saying things. If you don't know where you stand right now, you will be on the wrong side. And I hope more people wake up and choose which side. It is really interesting to me. You see it in Canada, the socialist and the death cult that is. That's an absolute death cult. You know, the number of people they're killing with assisted suicide. It's death. Abortion is celebrated. That's death. Sharia law. That's death. The BLM and trying to overthrow the families, in a way, that's death. Everything. It's a death cult. And what did God say? Choose life. Choose life. The choice has never been clearer in my life. And I pray every night that it doesn't become more clear. But at some point it's going to happen. And God help us if we're on the wrong side. I fear that that I won't be strong enough in the end. And
really?
I think that's my worst nightmare. Yeah, you never know what you're doing. You know, I went to Poland and I was talking to the chief rabbi of Poland, and I said, well, what happened? You know, there was like, how many were there? Like 4,000 righteous in Poland, like 4,000 Christians.
30,000 across Europe.
Yeah. And a small number in Poland. And And I said, what happened? How did that happen? Out of all these people, only that amount? And he looked at me and he shook his head and he laughed. And he said, are you kidding me? He said, the cost of just pulling the curtain on your window and looking to see if your Jewish neighbor was being taken away was death for you and your family. He said, I was shocked there were that many people. He said, I look at it a completely different way. The costs are going to come very, very high. And that's why I've tried for the last 20 years to prepare mentally and to prepare my family and to prepare spiritually, because we are in the battle. We're in a battle at least like it was in World War II. And I think it's going to be much worse.
Wow. Well, there's a line in the Talmud that says, don't trust yourself until the day you die. And it's saying, you know, you just never, ever think, oh, yeah, I'm good, I'm set. But I think the part of the message here is, if you're able to maintain that mentality, which you so clearly have, then it's much more likely that one is going to be able to stick to their values. And I have no doubt that you are going to be in that category.
I spoke to a Navy SEAL once, and he had been tortured. And I said, did you give anything up? And he said, Glenn, everybody breaks. Everybody breaks. Hmm. He said, it's just how long does it take you to break? How long can you go without breaking? And he said, you know who breaks first? He said, the ones who are in training and they say, I'll never break. I'll never break. They can do anything to me. I'll never break. He said, it's the ones who take it seriously and who have thought about it and have really prepared mentally, what is this going to be like? He said, those people make it. He said, in the end, you know, you can only take so much. The body can only take so much. But, right, you know, that, and I took that as meaning exactly what you said. Don't trust yourself.
Right.
Just don't trust yourself.
That point of everybody breaks also touches on a beautiful Hasidic teaching that I learned recently, that God doesn't expect us to be entirely righteous at all times. It's about every single bit of effort that we put in every day. That means the world to him and has an impact in making this world better. It's not about final outcomes. It's about, according to the effort is the reward, which is another line in the Talmud. But Glenn, just to finish, because I know we're probably out of time now, I just want to try and finish on a positive note if possible. You've said for so long that America needs to get back to its founding biblical principles. And I obviously completely agree. I think the whole world does, and Britain does, and Israel does. But I've sometimes wondered, what are practical things that we can do to help make that a reality? What are practical things that could be done at a national level, but also at a micro level to help make this happen?
Trying to remember the name of the guy who was a Soviet dissident that wrote Live Not by Lies. I can't remember his name, but look it up. He wrote he was in the Soviet Union, and he thought he was being taken away to the gulags for the last time. And instead, he was actually ushered into America and he was freed. But he wrote one last pamphlet to the Soviet people. And he said, look, I know that not everybody is a hero. Not everybody can do what I've done and go to the gulag. You know, nobody wants it. I don't want it. And I know the cost of speaking out, or, you know, I know you're not going to march in the street because it's certain death. He said, but don't accept the lie. Don't repeat the lie. Don't ever let a lie come out of your mouth. Don't tolerate a lie. You're in a movie and it's showing lies that you know is propaganda. You don't have to make a big scene. Just get out and walk away. You're in a meeting and somebody says something and you say, no offense, Steve, that's just not true. It's just not true. And we don't need to argue about it, but I have to excuse myself. I can't be a part of this. And you do it kindly. You just don't tolerate a lie. I'm sorry. That's still a dude. It's a guy in a dress. He can call himself that, and I'm fine. He can call himself whatever he wants, but I'm not going to say those things. I'm sorry. This is not a refugee problem. This is not a problem with people who are coming in for asylum and relief. No, this is an invasion. Look at what's happening. This is an invasion. This is not a group of peaceful people. Maybe many of them are, but this group right here is poison to our society. Those people who are involved in things like this, they need to be sent home. No, I'm not going to stop saying these things in public. No, you want to arrest me, and you're seeing this, man. I can't believe what England has turned into. No, I'm sorry. I am going to post that. No, I am sorry. I am going to speak out. You know, you have real consequences now. But if you don't stop allowing the lies to be spoken, it's only going to get harder. This is the easiest day for you to tell the truth in the next 10 years. Today is the easiest day. Tomorrow it's a little harder. Within 10 years, who knows if you're even going to be able to speak it. Speak it now.
Wow. So essentially, we need courage. Glenn, yeah. Thank you so, so much for making the time to speak with us. I know how busy you are and how you're doing so many amazing things, but I really, really appreciate it. And I know our audience will just love this conversation. And yeah. If possible, would love to have future ones as well.
I would love to have you. I tell you, everybody said, why are you doing this? We looked up this show. Why are you doing it? I said, because it's important to me. I love this guy. So, anytime.
I'm so excited to share with you something that I've been working on for a while. We've just taken JTV content to the next level. Introducing JTV Plus, a new platform streaming exclusive content created and handpicked by me. Get ready for jaw-dropping documentaries, exclusive interviews, insider access, and so much more. JTV Plus brings you captivating stories that will shock and inspire you. Stories that, honestly, I'm discovering for the first time too. From Israel to Jewish history to Judaism, it's all there. In exclusive interviews, you'll hear guests open up about things they've never shared publicly before. Plus, I'll take you behind the scenes where I get a lot more personal with you. By joining JTV Plus, you're not just joining an exclusive community, you're partnering with me to help JTV reach new heights. Just search j-tv.plus and join our exclusive community today. There's a link in the video description. I'll see you there.